Instead of our regular class in Navi, we're starting a series for the next few weeks about the Jewish home. And we're going to start with a focus on the relationship between husband and wife and cultivating it. And we're going to try to end with parenting skills and foundations in parenting. Now, as I was on my way here today, this one's true. It's not just the way speakers begin. I went with Ephraim on the way back. So we sat down to drink something. A kid walks in with his father, and his father goes and buys them some cookies and cakes. And Ephraim and I are sitting there, we're talking, and the kid walks over with a bag of Dragalach, and he says, "Dragalach are delicious." So we agree. And then he says, "My father's buying me a whole bag of Dragalach." So I told him, "You know why? Probably because your father loves you a lot." So I thought I was saying something pretty innocent. Like, the kid tells me his father's buying him Dragalach. So I tell him, "Yeah, it's probably because your father loves you a lot." And he looks at me with a smile. And he says, "No, my parents are divorced." And then he walks away. This is an hour ago. So it took me a second. Like, what's he answering me? "No, my parents are divorced." And he walks away. When we speak about building a Jewish home, and when we're going to focus the beginning of our class on the relationship between parents, the relationship between husband and wife, we have to remember that on the one hand, we're trying to cultivate a relationship and build a beautiful home and beautiful relationship. But we also have to remember that as much as we're going to talk about the parents, they owe something to their kids. And when we talk about the home, a good relationship between the parents is a good investment in the kids. And a relationship which is less than good has its toll on the kids. That's what this kid was answering me, I think. I'm telling him, "Your father bought you all these cookies because he loves you a lot." And he's telling me, "No." What did he tell me no about? He knows his father bought him all the cookies. He's telling me no on the... I'm telling him his father loves him a lot, and he's telling me, "No, my parents are divorced." I can't forget the kid who came to class the first day of class, and I always interviewed the kids on the first day of class. And when I speak to them, so I always ask them, like, "What... is there anything you want me to know?" Aside from the general details I'd ask them. So one kid would tell me how his reading skills are, and another kid would tell me, "I hope you're going to tell a lot of stories this year," and each kid would tell me something else. And one kid tells me, "I'm divorced." So I'm thinking, okay, 11-year-old boy, he's divorced. What's going on? So I asked him, "What do you mean?" And he tells me, "Oh no, I meant my parents are divorced." And to this day, I can't forget that sentence. "I'm divorced," the kid said initially. He didn't say my parents are divorced. starting looking down, like talking about negative. I just want to point out that all our discussion that's going to focus on the positive, on cultivating the relationship between parents, we have to remember that we're going to talk about the aspects of husband and wife, but that's not because we're forgetting the importance of the relationship between the parents and its effects on the children. What is a bayit? What is a bayit? When a child is born, 8 days old, so we give him a circumcision, and everyone wishes him that he should grow up to what?
Torah,
chuppah, and ma'asim tovim. He's sitting here, this little one doesn't know how to talk, doesn't know what just went over him, and we're already telling him, "You should make it to Torah." Okay, I can understand that 5 years old, he's going to start learning Torah. But chuppah, that's what we're focused on. The kid sitting here just got circumcised, we're already talking about the chuppah. Ma'asim tovim, I can understand, but then maybe it should have been Torah, ma'asim tovim, and then chuppah. What's the order here? What is a bayit? You say, when a couple gets engaged, they should merit to build a bayit ne'eman v'Yisrael. What is a bayit? So the term bayit means potential for housing. We think bayit as a home, but bayit really means something that has room inside of it, something that has some kind of vessel that could house something. The Mishnah says there are vessels that are flat, they have no indentation, so you can't put anything in them. And then there are vessels that have a hollow. They have an indentation, you can place something in them. The vessels that you can place something in them are called clay vessels, ba'alei, that have batim. They have batim. What is that? They don't have houses in them. They have the potential to store something in them. So when we speak about a bayit, we're talking about potential. The Gemara tells us, Hasharui belo isha. We'll translate that loosely for now. In a different class, we'll have to focus on that. A man who doesn't have a wife, Sharui, his state is that he is belo tova, he has no good. Belo choma, he has no protection. Belo Torah, he has no Torah. The Gemara enumerates many, many things that when a person is without a wife, he doesn't have anything good in life. So he said, gee, you didn't have to tell us, Rabbi. We all want to get married. Yeah, but we have to understand that when we speak about marriage, so there's speaking about the want to have a mate, and then there's speaking about building a Jewish home. And it's true that a husband and wife are mates, but there's a lot more to it than that. Every creature was created male and female. When God came to create man, so God said, "Ul Adam lo matza ezer kenegdo." God, when He looked at man, so man didn't have any corresponding being that would support him, that would be of assistance to him. Now, if the pasuk simply meant we need to create a woman in order to have a continuation of mankind, so then the pasuk wouldn't have needed all this introduction. But when the pasuk introduced the creation of woman, the pasuk said, when God had man, God did not have a corresponding being that would be his ezer, his assistant. What is a woman? Yeah, I didn't mean that as a real question. We'll also talk about the connector, yeah. So we know that the Torah describes man's creation. It's taking earth and creating man. And for some reason, woman isn't created this way. When the woman is created, so she's taken, either a slice of man is taken, or a piece of man is taken, and the woman is created. What's the idea? Why are things happening that way? So we never understand the ways of God. But Rav Kook says, if man and woman were supposed to be married, and we know that the Torah tells us that the concept of Adam is both translated as man, but it's not man. Adam means the entity which human beings can become, which corresponds to their creator. We think, I'm an Adam. No, if you're not married, you're not an Adam. You're half an Adam. Only a man with his wife is an Adam. Man, woman, together, that's Adam. One man, he's not an Adam. He might be an Ish, but he's not an Adam. The concept of Adam is a high level. A non-Jew isn't called Adam. Adam is only a Jew. Adam is a human entity which has reached a certain level. So Rav Kook asks, why is it that God didn't have man be born with a spouse? We're born, we develop in a home, we develop our habits and our opinions and our thoughts and our perspectives, and we grow up, and then suddenly, at the age of 18 or 20, we start looking for a match, 22. At some point we find her, and then we get married, and we enter a house together, and suddenly we discover, hey, what perspective do you have on this? That's not my perspective. How come you do things this way, I do things that way? We start discovering differences between us. So Rav Kook says, wouldn't it have been much better if we would have grown up together? And we know who our spouse is. And then we develop together. And then we marry and build a house together. So Rav Kook says that God wanted each one to develop his strengths and his traits individually. God wanted us to develop differently. God wanted each to have the opportunity to develop his strengths and not be affected by the other who's standing right near him. We each have to develop. And then our differences are going to be the points on which we build our home. We're not supposed to be identical. We're supposed to be very, very similar, but we're not supposed to be identical. And we complement one another. So coming back to the bayit, the home. The source of everything is the home. A person who's at peace at home, so when he goes out, he knows he has what to rely on. Person who knows he could come back home, so when he's out, he behaves differently. The Tosefta has a long example of a person who goes to the market, and he has to take a trip on a ship, and when he's out, what does he think is going on in his home when he's not there? How does he think his wife is answering the door? How does he think his wife is treating all the guests, and how does he think she's treating all the people who she runs into? What does he think is waiting for him when he comes back? Some of us come from homes which we emulate, and some of us come from homes which are not exactly the way we want to build our homes. We're faced with an interesting task of building a home with Jewish ideals when we don't have what to look back on. And that's why, at all costs, and almost over my dead body, still alive, but we're having this class. We have to try and figure out how we want to build our homes and get perspective that'll help us when we date and get perspective that'll help us when we get married, because the home isn't the place where you want to be under pressure. In yeshiva, you're working to get somewhere. When you come home, you want to relax. You want to feel at home. You don't want to feel, gee, what am I supposed to do now? What am I supposed to do here? In yeshiva also, you shouldn't be under pressure, but you're working to get somewhere. And your whole life you're going to be working to get somewhere. But the home has to be a source of contentment. The home has to be a source of calm and relaxation. Now, we discussed on Thursday night that the home is like the slippers. You can wear high heels, you can wear tighter shoes, you can wear sneakers. You want to wear slippers when you come home. And that's the idea. That's what the home is supposed to be like. So how do we reconcile the idea that at home you do whatever you want, so to speak, and we want a home which is running the way Judaism expects it to run, and a home that's going to build a person emotionally, Torah-wise, in every front? How do we reconcile the two? So one of the ways to reconcile the two is to take the time that we're taking now, beforehand, and get perspective on what's going to be in that home. The average person, the perspective he has on what's going to be in his home is what he saw at home. As much as a person can say, I want to change from what I saw at home, and I've changed from what I've seen at home, bottom line, when a person comes to build his own home, chances are he's going to build pretty much the same home his parents did. There are very high statistics on people who come from broken homes ending up with broken homes. How do you get around that? One of the keys to getting around that is preparing. Not waiting until you're married and then trying to figure out, how do I fix this? And that's why we're having this class. We're going to try to discuss many aspects of the home and try to build perspective. I have to tell you that I don't feel fit for the job. This is hefty responsibility. We're talking about how you're going to build your homes. And I don't have a choice. And no one else is giving the class. I'm giving the class. But feel free to speak to other people, get other perspectives, and I invite everyone to spend Shabbatot at other people's homes. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it many times again. I think one of the greatest things you could get is a perspective of what a home is. And as much as we're going to discuss many aspects of the home here, the true perspective is when you see it. There's no way we could see it here. And there's no way I could even know what issues to tackle. I don't begin to know what
what people are thinking and what people are used to. I told you guys the story of the Baal Tshuva whose wife wanted a get. I told you the story about Kiddush. She came to the rabbis and she said, I want a get. So they asked her, what's wrong? This is a true story. She said, my husband's crazy. So I said, what does he do that's so crazy? Tell us what's crazy about him. So she said, Friday night, comes time for Kiddush. He takes the Kiddush class. As he's making Kiddush, he dips his eyes into the Kiddush class. You ever see anyone do that before? Yeah, I never saw anyone do that. He's nuts. So they hear what she has to say. They call the husband in. They ask him, is it true? Is this what you do during Kiddush? So he says, yeah, it's true. Every Friday night, when it comes time for Kiddush, I take Kiddush class and I dip my eyes in the glass. So they ask him, why are you doing that? So he said, what do you mean, why am I doing that? Open up Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, it says, Yiten einav bekos shel bracha. He should place his eyes in the glass that he's going to make a blessing on. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. It's true. Shulchan Aruch used the term Yiten einav, he should place his eyes, and meant you should look at the Kiddush glass. He read it literally, place your eyes in the Kiddush glass. So he placed his eyes in the Kiddush glass. Now, could anyone know in advance that that's what he's going to do? If he'd have attended my class, I wouldn't have known to say anything about it. So that sounds funny, but there are many things that are funny, and I don't even know what to address them. So I'm going to try, but your best bet is to go. Be guests at people's houses. I've said many, many times, you could get a lot more than can be given in a class by seeing a home. See what people do. I was shocked when a couple from the yeshiva came to our house and they sat down at the meal and they didn't wash their hands. They came to make hamotzi without washing. I thought maybe they didn't learn the halachos. But then they started making a blessing on each food that was brought to the table. So they didn't know that when you make hamotzi on bread, so that sort of encompasses all the food of the meal. And I wouldn't have known to say that, because any kid that's grown up in any home, and I assume if you attend the lunchroom here, you see that that's what goes on. You make amotzi on bread, and you don't make a blessing on any other food, because that's all considered tafel. That's all considered, so to speak, that it's giving flavor to the bread. The main course is the bread, and everything else comes as a side dish to it. You made a blessing on the bread, everything else was included. I wouldn't have known to cover that. You asked for examples. I wanted to give them the second examples. You want an example, so I'm giving you another example. I don't know to cover everything, but I'll try to cover a lot of the points I think are important. I'm going to try to cover mainly the ideals and the technical stuff. Go to people's houses. Go out for Shabbos. Go for meals. Pay attention. See what's going on. You had a question? We're talking about when you get married. I'm not talking about now.
Right, but, okay. And also, we're so far, like, a lot of, I can speak for myself, I'm so far away from, like, knowing everything that things will change. Like, it could change in a week. And I think I'm scared of that because, I don't know, you know, maybe the wife will be like, I'm not going to wait till I'm 90.
That's true. Halacha, we're not going to be able to cover everything. That's why we're trying in the halacha class to cover things as quickly as possible without spending too much time on details. And it's true, you can't wait till you're 90, but there is a certain foundation a person should have. And most people have that foundation from seeing it at home. Most people didn't learn the halachos. They don't know what Kiddush is supposed to be like. They don't know that when you start Kiddush Friday night, when you say Vayichuli, you're supposed to look at the candles. And when you hit the blessing on the wine, you look at the wine, like any blessing you make on food. And then the rest of the blessing, you just focus on the blessing. Most people don't know that. If they saw their father doing that, they do that. If they didn't, they don't. It's not critical. But at least they know that what Kiddush is supposed to look like Friday night. Most people didn't learn halacha about the family being together Friday night. It doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch, everyone should be there at the beginning of Shabbos. says in Shochanaruch, you should start the meal as soon as possible. I'm saddened when I hear of families that come home and he sits down to read the paper and she goes and does her thing and the kids do their thing, and 45 minutes into Shabbos, they sort of start the meal. This kid is still busy doing his thing, that kid's doing his thing. That's not a Shabbos meal. Now, Halacha says, as soon as you can, you come home from shul, you make kiddush as early as possible from the time you came home from shul. Everyone should be there. Now, that's not something that people know, but that's something that people have seen in their own home. Their father came home from shul Friday night, right away made kiddush, and everyone was there. We're going to try to cover as much as we could. Go to as many homes as you can. Spend as many meals as you can by other people's homes and start getting perspective. I agree that we can't cover everything, but we'll try. We'll try. We're going to do a quick overview of certain topics that we're going to try to cover here. The idea of shalom bayis, peace in the home. So peace in general is unnatural. And surprise, surprise, peace in the home is also unnatural. It's something that has to be worked on. One of the greatest tips I got before I got married, which I only heard after I was engaged, was you better be ready to work if you want this marriage to work. So at first I thought, that's funny, what do you mean? I found my wife, of course it's going to work. It doesn't work that way. Every marriage needs work. Every person could get a better perspective of other people, and we're going to discuss perspective. You could be married to the same woman and be tremendously appreciative. You could be married to the same woman and ask yourself, what's she doing all day? Perspective has a lot to do with how the home runs. A person who's very friendly and gets along with everyone outside the home doesn't mean he has the skills he needs to build a home. They're two different skills. We're going to discuss the importance of the only one. In short, in a nutshell, the main enemy of marriages nowadays, the first few years, is the thought, maybe she wasn't the right one. Or, in other terms, I'm sure there are better people out there. Or, in other terms, no one else is putting up with what I'm putting up. That's the main enemy of engagement periods also. Why guys don't get engaged. There must be something better out there. We're going to discuss the idea of Ish v'Isha zachu shechina b'neim. Our sages told us that man and woman, when they get together, the Shechina comes in when things are going right. If not, then there's fire. Ish, how do you spell Ish? Aleph, Shin, and a Yud in between. How do you spell Isha? Aleph, Shin, and a Hey afterwards. What's the difference between Ish and Isha? The Yud and the Hey, right? So you put the two together, you put the Yud and the Hey together. That's God's name. That's what we say. Ish and Isha together, you get God's name. If God's in the house, things are going to be nice. Take God's name out of their name, right? Take the Yud out of the Ish, take the Hey out of the Isha. What do you get? You get Ish on one side and Ish on the other side. Fire. Yeah, that's what our sages told us. That a man and a woman, if things are done the way God told us, then there's going to be the Shechina. God's going to rest his name in the house. Otherwise, there's fire. We're going to discuss the concept that the home is the wife. So some people think, yeah, she does the diapers, she does the dishes, she does the laundry. Sure, the home's the wife. That's not what Chazal meant. We're going to discuss the importance of beauty. The importance of beauty, the importance of being aesthetic. We're going to discuss the difference between the term Ishi, my man, and Ba'ali, which I guess could be translated my master. We're going to discuss the concept of Isha Kshira, that our sages told us a story of a woman and a man who got married, and they weren't of the same dialect. So one time he asked her to play something on the baba. Now baba, in his dialect, meant the windowsill. And from her dialect, it didn't mean that. So she went to the great sage Baba Ben Buta and she placed it on his forehead. And he understood what was going on. And he told her, Isha Kshira, you're a righteous woman. You did what your husband wanted. Don't feel bad. Everyone laughed. What's she doing putting it on Baba Ben Buta's head? And he didn't laugh. He said, you're a righteous woman. You're doing what your husband wanted. So some people enter marriage thinking, I'm marrying a righteous woman. She's going to do whatever I want. So we can discuss that. It doesn't work that way. And what does it mean then, the concept of Isha Kshira? That a righteous woman, she did what her husband wanted. How does that work?
We're going to discuss how we view the whole togetherness of a husband and wife. Are the great people with their wives like we are? The prophets. Is it an attribute that they were married, or is it a weakness? Some look at the whole concept of marriage as a weakness. Yeah, you're human, you're animalistic, you need a wife, so you get married. And Judaism doesn't work that way. So we think it doesn't work that way, and what's the relationship between the husband and wife? It's plutonic. They discuss concepts way up there. So that might be true, but there's more to it than that. For when God speaks to Yechezkel, Ezekiel, and tells him, prophecy that his wife is going to pass away, he tells him, "Hinini lokech et machmad einecha." I'm taking the fondness of your eye, the thing you're fond. That's how you call a wife, the fondness of your eye, machmad einecha. So we'll have to discuss that. We're going to discuss the concept that every prophet was married, other than Moshe Rabbeinu. And we're going to discuss the concept that women have bina yetera, extra understanding. On the one hand, we say they have bina yetera. On the other hand, we say that there are things you shouldn't take their counsel with. We say that there's a man who listens to his wife and she takes him to Gan Eden. There's a man who listens to his wife and she takes him straight to Ganem, to perdition. We're going to discuss the concept of Ve'elishech Chukatech. When God created woman and then men and women sinned from the Eitz Hadas, so God told the woman one of her curses was that she'll always be longing for her husband. How does that work? As part of that discussion, we're going to have to discuss the conflict between intimacy and autonomy. I'm my own man. And we want to be together. How does that work? The importance of showing warmth. The importance of showing respect. The importance of spending time together. The importance of talking. The importance of what we talk about with a woman. That's for starters. There are other things, but we'll start with that. Ish v'isha zachu shechina binim. Men and women, if they married, then the shechina is between them. When I first got married, so I met a rabbi who I'm very friendly with, and he asked me, how are things going? So I answered him the same answer I would have answered before I was married. I said, trying to learn. He met me by the door of the Beis Medrash, so I'm trying to learn. So he told me, that's how things are going? So I said, sure. That's what I'm doing, trying to learn. So he told me, I'm very sorry to hear that. He said, you just got married. Now you should be focused on trying to build a home. So I looked at him like, what? I'm walking in the Beis Medrash. Well, now I should be focused on trying to build a home? But it's true. It's true. When we start off, so we might be going to work, might be doing a lot of things, but our focus really has to be on trying to build a home. Ish v'isha zachu shechina b'nem. The shechina is between them. It doesn't say the shechina is upon them. You know, we think men and women, if they married, they're whole, so the shechina is upon them. But the Gemara doesn't say that. It says the shechina is between them. It takes the two, and in between them, if things are right, the shechina is there. We'll end with the story, and I want to end also with hearing from you what you want should be included in this class. I told you what I think, the beginning of what I think, the first few classes. I want to hear from you. There were many great sages. Some of them, their wives didn't know how to read or write. They said Rabbi Akiva Eiger's wife didn't know how to read or write. One of the halachos is that a husband is obligated to show his wife affection. And showing affection is giving time, spending time talking to one another. What do you think they spoke about if she didn't know how to read or write? Food for thought. What do you want us to cover in this class? Okay, we'll go around the class. I see everyone's bashful. Want to start?
No, I don't want to ask too large of a question, but maybe a couple simple topics like how to bring up, how to approach topics where you disagree completely. Like, for example,
Yeah, that's on the agenda.
Okay. And also,
how to disagree, really.
How to
approach?
Discipline your kids.
So I'll get that. That's if we succeed in covering the topics we need to hear, so we'll get to that too. Yeah. Anything else?
I'm not quite sure right now, so
I just have to know. Okay. Yeah? Pass the ball around. Yeah? Huh?
You know the Hebrew letters by heart?
Yeah,
sorry.
I'm Shalom.
It's very impressive.
I think also the idea of what kind of friends and people you want to invite in your household area, atmosphere. What kind of groups of people?
And what kind of what?
Like Ashrafa, so people have the idea of what children start to play with a certain kind of other group of Orthodox.
I can't hear you, I can't hear you.
You have different kinds of orthodoxy, so not everybody agrees what kind of children you want to play your children with or something. So you have all kinds of discussions about was it the Shalom Bayit idea?
I'm not clear on
what you do or not.
Like when you put your kids with Christian children who go to church.
One second, I let Avshalom just explain what he means.
For me, if you're Belgian, you don't want more than Orthodox people in your house, but one or the other doesn't, then the other does. So how do you solve the problem? Questions? It's shadow part of Shalom Bayit, I think.
Okay.
Different family members.
So I wrote it as how do we compromise? How do we come to an agreement on things that we disagree and they're important to us, they're critical to us, they're ideological differences. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, what else? Okay. Think about it. You're welcome to come back to me. Yeah, yeah.
Interaction with in-laws and larger family.
That's on the agenda. I was even going to cover that today, but we're out of time. What else?
And how to decide which rabbis to go by. Which I think she's a rabbi, but
I was on the agenda, yeah. What else?
Have to act when the wife says certain halachas she doesn't want to know.
Think about that. I'm not sure I have such a good answer. Okay. Okay. That's it? Yeah? Nothing. Okay. Anyone want to add anything? Yeah?
The issue is thinking about getting more depth about relationships. Like Hazal talks about that traditionally will be complicated, or we talked to wife or mother. I mean, like, just stuff that's known that we might not know. Like, traditionally, certain relationships within the family will have issues, or like a certain halachas, or in certain situations. For example, if you have grandparents and you have fathers,
give me more examples. I'm not sure what you mean.
Just basically, when you have a lot of family together, there's a potential for problems between in-laws. Are there any certain scenarios that, like the sages talk about, that traditionally we have certain approaches to, where you could have fire and fire, as you said, except from opposing families? So, I don't know if that makes just more in depth in terms of interaction between in-laws and yourself.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think that maybe we should run the class by letting you lead the class. I had three ways I thought we could run the class. We could take a book, a sefer, start with the sefer and expand on it. We could do what I started doing, which is I'll build the course like the way I think from scratch, like from the start. Or we could let you run it. You ask questions, you bring up topics, and we'll discuss them. Obviously, I'm taking your topics. If I do my own thing, then we'll do it automatically. We'll cover your topics. I think there's what to be gained by using Sefer. Firstly, it makes my life easier. I thought we'd use Ishu Beito, Rav Eliyahu Kito. He's the one who wrote the Book of Our Heritage. So he wrote a book about a man in his home. And I thought we'd use that. Either that or Abayit HaYudi by Rav Simcha Kohen. Yeah?
I think the more structure you can make this, probably the better.
The more what?
The more structure, most likely the better. There's so much Jesus has about these things, especially if we try to learn it ourselves, like you said. I think it would be hard to convey very much anyway. Except even using a safer. Safer, I imagine the reason safer is it's more like Akito is very methodical, and he would have included things we might not have thought to include. And these issues, these various things that are covered, we can then maybe at the end of class have 10, 15 minutes to bring up things that the literature would not quite cover.
So you're for using that safer? Could we take a vote? Yeah, who's for using the safer?
I'm not for using the safer.
What? It's a safer in Hebrew. So the question is, how much do we lose by reading a Hebrew text?
I think we should just have it straight up.
Okay, 1 second. So let's take a vote. How many people, so could we see, raise hands again? You're for the safer, yeah? So we have four for the safer. How many people are for not using the safer? Avshalom, you have no opinion, or you're for without a safer? What? No safer or no say? Huh?
No
safer. You prefer without a safer. What about you?
With safer.
Huh?
With safer.
I can't hear.
With
the book. You're outnumbered. I didn't even count my vote. I'm also entitled to a vote. But okay, so just bear in mind that you're going to get what you want. Avshalom, you're going to get what you want because most of the class is going to be out of the text. It's just a good way to keep us focused and make sure that we're methodologically advanced. Okay, Yishkoach.